Good morning. It's Thursday, the 28th of March, and this is Govind Raj Ethiraj broadcasting from Mumbai, India's financial capital. Our top stories and themes for the day: Indian markets find their footing once again in a holiday-shortened week. Goldman Sachs says US equities are fairly valued, but India has significant upside despite a rally. Mid-caps and small caps are bottoming out. Is that good news? Oil prices slide after a break. Where are they headed next? And a collapse of a bridge exposes supply chain fragilities once again.
This is a Core Report with Govind Raj Ethiraj.
Indian markets find their footing once again. As trading days go, Wednesday was a good day and perhaps better than expected for many. Indian stock markets were uplifted by index heavyweights like Reliance Industries, HDFC Bank and Maruti. The BSE Sensex closed up 526 points at 72,996, and the NSE Nifty 50 was up about 119 points, close at 22,124. Reliance Industries was very strong, making up 58% of Sensex gains after Goldman Sachs raised its target price on that stock, and more on Goldman Sachs coming up shortly. The rupee weakened slightly on Wednesday after Asian peers were also down. The rupee was 83 rupees 32 paise against the US dollar on Wednesday, compared to its previous close of 83 rupees 28 paise. Reuters reported that the rupee is expected to see sideways price action between 83.20 and 83.40 during the session, with the Reserve Bank of India expected to defend the currency from hitting all-time lows, according to foreign exchange advisory firm IFA Global, quoted by Reuters. The rupee had fallen to a record low of 83 rupees 43 paise last week and has since recovered, and that fall on Friday is something that we had explored in some detail with Anindya Banerjee, Forex analyst. Goldman says US is fairly valued, but India is still strong. A top Goldman Sachs strategist told CNBC on Wednesday he felt that US equities were fairly valued right now and there was limited upside at current valuations. All major US indices, by the way, and as you know, are at their record highs. On the other hand, Goldman Sachs saw India as a strategic long-term growth story with significant upside in the stock market. James Ashley, head of international market strategy at Goldman Sachs Asset Management, told CNBC. U.S. stocks have limited upside from here, given the macroeconomic backdrop, and investors should be looking for better opportunities elsewhere, according to them. Ashley said, where we see many other economies beginning to slow for both secular and indeed cyclical reasons, in India's case, we see the start of a very significant upswing. He said that we are looking at an economy here that could be growing at double-digit nominal GDP rates for the foreseeable future. He also acknowledged that while India's markets were not cheap right now, there was still significant upside based on that growth story. And how do you play that, he told CNBC. He said he thought that there was an across-the-board story. It's not about one particular sector. And if you were to look at the small caps and mid caps in particular, there's a huge opportunity to generate alpha in that market, Ashley said. So speaking of small and mid caps, we all know that there has been a significant decline in these stocks. And importantly, this is also the segment of the market regulators have been raising alarms, notably the Securities and Exchange Board of India, warning about exuberance and even asking mutual funds, for example, with small and mid-cap portfolios to run stress tests to see what would happen if investors were to suddenly start redeeming their units and head for the door. On the other hand, some brokerages, as you heard, for instance, are already calling a bottom of sorts here. So where do we stand? I reached out to market analyst and veteran Ambarish Baliga, and I began by asking him how he was seeing the current state of the mid-cap and small-cap cycle.
In the mid-cap, small-cap, and I would also include micro-cap, I mean, most of these stocks, I believe that the valuations are extremely stretched. And finally, it needed the regulator to come and talk about it to ensure that sanity returns to markets. Based on that statement, we saw a decent correction. I wouldn't say it was a huge correction. It was a decent correction because most of these stocks had become multi-baggers in a very short while. I mean, you expect stocks to become multi-baggers over years. Here, we have seen multi-baggers in a couple of months, whereas the ground situation as far as the sector is concerned or even the specific stocks are concerned, hadn't changed very much. But still, they became multi-baggers. So clearly, I mean, there was a lot of froth. And I don't believe that the froth has cleared yet. Typically, whenever we had seen corrections in the past, I mean, the smaller corrections which we had seen in the past year and a half, were always bought into. We had seen the stocks bouncing back every time and getting back on track on a bull run. I think this has created a decent amount of confidence among the retail investors, and because of which liquidity was flowing into, I mean, this segment. In fact, we saw a virtuous cycle which played out extremely well till we had the regulator issue a statement. Now, whenever there's a bounce back, you'll always have the bulls of that segment saying that the worst is behind us and this is the start of a new rally. But then finally, fundamentals do catch up sometime or the other. And I believe it's high time that fundamentals do catch up with this segment. And I believe that this could only be a bounce back, again to trap the gullible retail investors to invest fresh and get stuck. But at the same time, each and every stock in the micro, small and mid cap falls in this category? No. I mean, there are still those pockets where the valuations could still be very decent. But then by and large, most of the stocks are expensive at this point of time.
So, Ambarish, are there some sectors or specific subsectors which come to mind where you're actually visualizing this, where you feel that clearly the fundamentals are not holding up against the kind of prices we're seeing, or even companies, if you can quote?
A couple of sectors which have been in vogue in the last 18 months plus, I would say defense and railways. Again, when we talk of the mid-caps, they are mostly ancillaries to this space. Just because they have something to do with railways or they have something to do with defense, we have seen those stocks really shooting up. But at the same time, we should remember that the markets have discounted the huge amount of order flows which have flown to these larger companies in this space. Some of these companies have taken in orders which are about 6 to 8 times their current revenue. And that's huge by any standards. What I believe is most of the orders have got front-ended for whatever reason. I don't see these orders really getting executed in the next 2 or 3 years. So it can really stretch, because as of now, if you're talking of 6 to 8 times current revenue, the orders can get stretched, which again means that can they take fresh order flows with this sort of order book already, and can they afford to take fresh order flows? And number two, no one is really talking of execution risks. I mean, you're expecting all these orders to be executed flawlessly, which I don't think is possible. I don't think anyone really is in a position to expand the capacity 3x or 4x to meet the sort of order flows which are there. Because whatever said and done, there is a limitation to capacity expansion. There's a limitation to skilled manpower. I don't think the market is discounting this part of the whole story. As in when that plays out, I mean, that will come as a revelation. And I think that's the time the markets can react adversely in this sector. But if you again ask me, long, am I bearish on defense and railways? Surely not. But then from a stock market perspective, when stocks have run up much beyond their intrinsic worth, it's time to be cautious, wait for a correction, and then possibly get back in that sector from a longer term perspective.
Ambarish, that's a very useful illustration as well. And I'm sure it might apply to a few of the other sectors as well. So defense and railways. Ambarish, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Morgan Stanley revises India GDP forecast. Morgan Stanley has joined other institutions in revising its GDP growth forecast for the financial year 24-25, that's the coming year, in its case, to 6.8% from a previous estimate of 6.5%. It's also revised its growth forecast for the current financial year, which ends in a few days, to 7.9%. Morgan Stanley expects India's GDP growth to remain robust, with an anticipated growth rate of around 7% for the fourth quarter of 23-24, that's this quarter. And this growth momentum is expected to be widespread, it says, with converging gaps between rural urban consumption and private public capital expenditure in 24-25, according to Business Standard. Moreover, the firm foresees a favorable inflation trajectory with recent trends indicating a moderation in headline inflation. Oil slides after a break. Crude oil prices fell for the second day on Wednesday after an industry report pointed to a large buildup in U.S. petroleum stockpiles. Brent was around $85.60 overnight on Wednesday. The American Petroleum Institute said crude stockpiles rose for the week ended March 22nd. Brent is actually up about 11% now in 2024. So to get a broader sense on what the forces were that were driving crude prices right now from a, both a demand and supply point of view, and to get a sense on the outlook, I reached out and spoke to well-known oil analyst Vandana Hari of Singapore-based Vanda Insights, and I began by asking her what she was seeing in the oil market right now.
So you're right, prices have come off a bit from close to 4.5 month highs. But compared to the rally that we have seen, especially over the past couple of weeks, the pullback is relatively small. Now, what is holding, before I get to the demand and supply question, because clearly fundamentals are important always, but let's talk a little bit about what the risk premium, basically, which is behind this rally that we have seen to 4.5 month highs. So there is right now a risk premium in crude on account of two main factors. One is, of course, the Gaza crisis. And though over the past more than 4 months, there have been times when it felt like perhaps a ceasefire would be agreed and maybe things would calm down a bit, that hasn't transpired so far. And the last, again, ray of hope that we had was at the end of last week when it seemed like the US was actually changing tack. And then finally, we saw that a UN resolution was passed calling for an immediate ceasefire, but that has not happened. So essentially, let's call it a Mideast fear premium. Yes, it percolates into all the problems we are having with the Houthi attacks and the Red Sea. To some extent, it is a fear of wider conflagration in the Middle East and all of that. So that is persisting. I would put, as we're talking, Govind, Brent is trading a little over $85, right? At this level, I would say easily $6 to $7 of premium is from the Middle East, the Gaza crisis alone. The second factor is, of course, the Ukraine drone attacks against Russia. So an estimated, the capacity that has been targeted and then the capacity that has actually been hit through, you know, fire or some sort of damage at some unit or the other is pretty vast. We should look at the capacity that has been shuttered in Russia. That's nearly 600,000 to 700,000 barrels per day. That's the industry consensus. So that's no small amount of refining capacity basically to be shut. And, you know, that creates the concern of refined products deficit in the global markets. I would say about probably $4 to $5 premium on account of that. So all in, about a little, you know, anywhere from $10 to $12. So as far as fundamentals are concerned, frankly, nothing has changed. And now we are entering the second quarter, which, you know, as we know, Northern Hemisphere is coming into spring and then gradually summer. So this is actually globally called the shoulder months. It's a period of relative lull in demand. There is not that much concern on the demand front. But of course, then on the supply front, we have OPEC Plus continuing. They agreed to extend their voluntary cuts into Q2. They are maintaining a rein on supply. You know, they are clearly concerned that prices would start going south very quickly if they brought that supply, more than 2 million barrels per day, back into the market.
Right. So you've also sort of answered my outlook question. So let me put the other one to you. Now, India was importing a lot of oil from Russia, and some of that oil is now cannot make it because of increased sanctions, particularly on some Russian fleets and oil companies. So what does that mean broadly for the Indian oil basket, at least in your understanding right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So from the data that we have tracked, at its height, India bought about, I think, almost 1.9 million barrels per day of crude from Russia. That's a huge amount. Not in the recent history, or as far as I can see, has India ever bought that much crude from a single supplier. So that was quite phenomenal. You know, more than 40% of Indian crude at one point was coming from Russia. As you point out, a host of factors have led to that volume declining. The decline started at the end of last year. And in large part, it was related to the U.S. starting to tighten the implementation of the Russian price cap of $60 per barrel. The U.S. started doing that in October, and we saw a host of sanctions slapped on trading companies, shipping companies, on tankers themselves, a lot of which were involved in bringing all of this crude to India. So, however, I think it's important to note, Govind, that the drop or the impact of that on India is being slightly overplayed, in my view. It's not like it's come off a big amount. So if I look at, you know, Jan, Feb numbers, I think it was close to 1.5, 1.6 million barrels per day. So yes, it's definitely come off from the peak of that we saw middle of last year, but not by a whole amount. Nonetheless, yes, I think this tightening of sanctions is a concern for India. Indian refiners, Indian banks, which have to facilitate the trade, of course, the payment, are being very, very cautious. So Indian refiners have simply turned to other suppliers. You know, there's plenty of supply. U.S. supplies there. That dream has grown into India. They've turned to the Middle Eastern suppliers. So then what is the difference? In the end, the difference is simply that some of the really sweet, big discounts that India was enjoying on Russian crude, those are gone. So that is a slight disadvantage as far as refining margins are concerned. So two things. Russian supply hasn't completely collapsed. Yes, it has come off. The other is that there's plenty of supply available, but the margins won't be as great.
And we are heading into a lean spring season, as you said.
Yeah.
Relatively. Right, Vandana. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Govind.
Japanese yen hits a 34-year low. The Japanese yen has dropped to its weakest level in about 34 years against the dollar. The currency dipped to 151.97 per dollar in Tokyo on Wednesday, passing the 151.95 levels that prompted Japan to wade into markets in October 22, according to Bloomberg. The yen then strengthened later in the day after a report of a meeting between officials of the finance ministry, the central bank, and the financial regulator in Japan. Incidentally, authorities in Tokyo spent about $60 billion in 2022 to prop up the yen on three occasions, each time insisting that they were not protecting any specific currency level, according to Bloomberg once again. Now, that part, of course, is useful if you intend to draw any inferences to India's own currency management approach by the Reserve Bank of India. Gold imports fall thanks to high prices. India's gold imports will fall by more than 90% in March from the previous month to hit their lowest levels since the COVID pandemic as banks cut imports after record high prices squeezed demand, according to a government official and two bank dealers who spoke to Reuters. Gold imports were at unusually high levels in recent months. In February, they hit almost $6 billion. That was up about 133% compared to the same month last year. Gold imports in March 24 are expected to be lower, and domestic prices rose to a record 66,943 rupees per 10 grams earlier this month. High prices also lead to customers exchanging old jewelry for new ones. A bridge collapse and the domino effect. And the world has been reminded through another unfortunate accident the importance of global supply chains and the domino effect the failure of one link in that chain can cause. On Tuesday, a container ship rammed into Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge, sending much of that 50-year-old steel structure into the river below. Now, Baltimore isn't a huge port for containers, about 3% of the total on the East and Gulf Coasts, reports Bloomberg, but it handles the nation's largest volume of automobiles, as well as a lot of less consumer-facing items like coal, gypsum, and lumber. With total trade last year amounting to about $80 billion, every day Baltimore is closed is about $217 million of trade that's not crossing its docks. Meanwhile, car companies like Ford and General Motors are rerouting their traffic, but all of which will involve longer shipping times and, of course, increased costs. The number two port for car carriers is in Brunswick, Georgia, about 700 miles south. Farmers gearing up for planting season may also feel the impact, as Baltimore had become the leading U.S. port for importing combines, tractors, hay balers, excavators, and backhoes because of its proximity to the U.S. Midwest's major farm and construction equipment manufacturers, said Bloomberg. Closer home, the Suez Canal is practically blocked off for much of the traffic coming to or going from India, particularly into Europe, and onwards because of the tensions in the Middle East, which we also touched upon earlier in the show with Vandana Hari, as now many ships are forced to go around Africa. Clearly, while the world at large is trying to make supply chains more efficient and streamlined, accidents like this, or unexpected accidents like this, can clearly throw a spanner in the works. And before we go, just a reminder that we will not have an edition on Friday, that's Good Friday, and we will be back on Monday. That was The Core Report with me, Govindraj Ethiraj. Do stay connected with more of our coverage at The Core. You can check out our website or sign up to our newsletter for our exclusive stories, one in-depth feature a day on www.thecore.in. Do also track us on LinkedIn, where we usually post synopses or extracts of our top stories and interviews. We would love your feedback on how we can make business more interesting and relevant, including, of course, India's vibrant manufacturing sector. So write to us at feedback@thecore.in. And thank you once again for listening.